Welcome to the Tell Us Something podcast. I'm Mark Moss, your host. Tell Us Something awakens imagination, empowers storytellers, and connects the Missoula community through the transformative power of personal storytelling. It is a celebration of each other, our stories, and how we move through the world together. All of the stories that tell us something are true. Stories last for 10 minutes and are told from memory. Everyone is welcome to tell a story. The Missoula community comes together for a night of true stories, shared live, focused on a theme. Everyone has a story. What's yours? This quarter's Tell Us Something was recorded on June 9th, 2015 at the Top Hat Lounge in Missoula, Montana. Eight storytellers shared their true story based upon the theme, Oops, I Changed My Mind. Today's story comes to us from Alex Alvier and is titled, The Worst Asian Ever. Thanks for listening.
I'm going to start my story with a child at a lake in lily pads. I'm going to end my story with a child at a lake in the lily pads. And in between there, there's a church and there's a grain elevator. So you can follow along that way. So the first child, it's 1943. The Japanese have occupied the Philippines. In the village of Tadlac, it's rumored that they're taking children and throwing them up in the air and catching them on bayonets. One child escapes. And the story goes, they hid in the lilies of the lake so he wouldn't be found. That child grows up. He ends up walking through the villages. The old women recognize that he's smart, and so they start to shove money into his pockets for school. He keeps going. He raises money selling duck eggs and eggplant to put himself through medical school. That man eventually makes it on to America, to the suburbs of Detroit, and becomes my father. And from what he told us as kids, because they had to hide with him in the reeds and the lily pads, that's why he was named Moses. And so I just called him this morning. I said, hey, Dad, is that true? He's like, oh, I made that up. But the rest is true. The duck eggs, the eggplant, that's all true, okay? And, you know, so, but stories are important because stories, even as we heard them as kids, you have no idea the weight of that story because it infects the entire lineage of our family. And even the way that my father is perceived, even though he's not the oldest sibling, his older siblings tremble in fear when he's angry because he's known in the family not just for being the person who worked really hard and made it to America, but he's also known as just the kind of moral upright backbone. And so he'll spank other people's kids and he won't care. It's kind of like that. People get afraid of him that way. And so, this is my lineage. And there's a lot that comes with that in terms of an expectation of excellence. So my sister, she was not valedictorian, but salutatorian. And in our house, like if you get a 97%, instead of like, hey, good job, it's like, where's the other 3%? So, you know, it was kind of there. You know, my brother, he's a very accomplished person as well, has all of you that have cell phones, some of those patents are from him. And then there's me. I was the kid that, well, I didn't really do so well in terms of grades. I got B's and C's, and, you know, that counts as an Asian F, really, when it comes down to it, in my family. And so, there, that's one thing you need to know about right away, about legacy. And now for me, I didn't really fit in with that legacy. And so where we ended up going to school was part of the American dream, part of the Filipino dream, is you make your way to America and you can send your kids to Catholic school. That means you have arrived. So, you know, here we are. We've arrived at Catholic school and have really distorted stories of who Moses is, and I'm thinking my dad is Moses, or like the one in the Bible, and it's like, no, it's not true. And so, but one moment happened that was very defining for me at that Catholic school and that Catholic church. So it's an all-white school in an all-white suburb of Detroit. And although there were no Jim Crow laws, we were the only immigrant family. And so by definition, we'd show up on Sundays, and we always, always sat in the back row. It was just this automatic response, just what my parents did. And so we did the same. And one day, an usher came up to us, and he asked my dad, he said, would your family like to bring the gifts up? I don't know how familiar you are with Catholic Church, but it's a big deal to bring up the wine and the bread during the ceremony of communion. And my dad said, yes. I'm like, what the fuck are you doing, Dad? And I absolutely freaked out. I was crying. I was kicking and screaming. I'm like, I am not going down that aisle. No way. And, you know, I've never explained this to my family. To this day, they still were like, yeah, you remember that time in second grade where you, why were you crying? Like, I just never had a good answer for them. And the truth is, I could go to school and no one sees me in my family. They just see me. But here, in that setting, in that church, they see my whole family. And they see me as a part of that family. And it was the most terrifying thing for me to have all these white faces looking at us. And so it goes on from there, because now I got to get into my dating life for you guys. So it's one of those odd things at that moment, though, where, oh, they asked us to come as kind of an offering, a token, to help us feel included. And I respect that, and I understand that. But it also just was incredibly unnerving for me. And what I realized from that is that there's a lot of what I call invisible scripts. It's an invisible script why we would sit in the back. It was an invisible script why they thought it'd be a good idea to bring, have the one brown family bring it up. Wouldn't that be cool? Right? And so those scripts carried and followed. By the time I was a freshman in high school, this girl named Shizuka called me up. I haven't seen Shizuka since kindergarten. But because she's Chinese and she's Asian and I'm Asian, I guess therefore we need to date each other or something. And so we're literally sitting across from each other from dinner. I'm like, so have you been for the last decade? Yeah. And so, again, there's this other kind of invisible scripts. Now, one of the things that happens with that is I go on to college, and in college then, instead of hanging out and feeling awkward with all white people, I'm like, I'm going to reclaim my roots. This is the 90s. Everyone's like, back to the roots, you know, multiculturalism, all these sorts of things. So I hung out with all Asian students, okay, and had a lot of friends that way and that sort of thing. It was all nice and multicultural and diverse and wonderful. But one of the odd things happened was I actually happened to drive across country to Boulder on my way to interview somebody for a project. And I brought two of my white hippie friends with me. And It was the coolest moment for me. I'd never left Detroit. And we were at a grain silo in this small greasy spoon out in the middle of nowhere restaurant where literally there was a hand-painted sign that said, "Come eats." And I went in, and it was like, to me, it was like the most amazing, charming thing in the world. And we went in, we ate, and I was like, wow, this is cool. This is authentic American thing, right? And we left, and what I said to them both was like, hey, thank you guys. You know, because I wouldn't have been able to do that without you guys with me. I don't think I would have ever gone in there on my own. My friend Bill was like, cool. My friend Amy was just like, well, what do you mean? It's 1998. What are you worrying about? And it was suddenly that real big, I'm like, well, so we had this long discussion about in the car about, yeah, I do feel uncomfortable at times going into different places where there does seem to be an invisible script. But one of the things that happened after that grain silo was I went back to my Asian girlfriend back in college, and I suddenly realized we're together. And are we together because we choose each other? Or are we together because there's a written script for us that we have to follow? And what I wanted the grain silo. I wanted those mountains. I wanted that small town. And I knew, because we tried it, she was afraid. She couldn't come with me to there. She couldn't go there without feeling really suspicious and feeling small and wanting to sit in the back row, just like my family, in the back row of that church. And so one of the things that happened for me then eventually was that slowly over time, for whatever strange reason, I ended up at living in a Quaker community on a lake as a winter caretaker to write the manuscript that eventually got me accepted in the University of Montana. And I was working at a job, and it was proper, it was corporate, I was using my English degree, I got to be publishing, and my family was so excited, because like, hey, wow, he looks like an adult now. You know, he's growing up. And I decided, as I rode out onto that lake one morning, it was the most beautiful Michigan fall I could ever imagine. It was literally the colors of the trees inverted on the black water of the lake, and I'd kayak out all by myself. And then I knew I had to get in my car and drive and go to that job. And for me, I had this moment of like, okay, what is the script here? Alex does the grown-up thing in the job. He will probably work 9 to 5 and marry an Asian girl and have Asian kids, and my family will be happy. Or I'm 24. I will never, ever have a life on this lake like this ever again. What do I want to tell my kids who are one day in the future? What's the script? What's the story I want? And so I told my brother, I'm like, hey, I'm thinking about quitting. And he goes on the phone, sorry, dude, but Snoop Doggy Dog needs to get a jobby job and grow up. And so again, there's that script. I'm like, damn it. But I did change my mind, and I quietly quit. I didn't tell anybody. And years later, at that same lake, the same place I eventually brought my parents out to see, I brought my family. And I'm standing there with my son, who has hazel eyes, green eyes sometimes, in the lily pads, kayaking through. And I want to be able to tell him, Listen, if you ever want to go against those scripts, do it. Just like your dad.
Tell Us Something is proud to be fiscally sponsored by Missoula Community Foundation, a 501c3 organization. Missoula Community Foundation has been providing leadership to Missoula nonprofits and inspiring long-term philanthropy in Missoula since 2007. For the good of Missoula, forever. MissoulaCommunityFoundation.org. Thank you for your support of live storytelling and local art. The bookstore at the University of Montana, a local bookstore serving the students, faculty, and staff of the University of Montana, as well as the Missoula community. MontanaBookstore.com. Fact and Fiction, where books, authors, ideas, and readers interact. FactandFictionBooks.com. Top Hat Lounge, bringing great music to Missoula for over 60 years, the Top Hat hosts a variety of Montana-based artists and has become a destination for national touring musicians. In addition to great music, the Top Hat hosts comedy shows, film, performance art, and storytelling. TopHatLounge.com. Haley Faust is a graphic and media designer based in the heart of the Rocky Mountains. From concept to final design launch, Haley puts her heart and soul into your design project. HaleyFaust.com. Zoo City Apparel, custom screen printing. ZooCityApparel.BigCartel.com. Thanks to Cash for Junkers, who provide the music for the podcast. Find them at CashForJunkersMusic.com. Rock and Rudy's, your source for the best music, gifts, and more. Great music, great people. RockandRudy's.com. Podcast production by Nathan Zavolmi of Missoula Soundworks. MissoulaSoundworks.com. And thank you to everyone who attends the events, those of you who download the podcasts, and especially to the storytellers. Brian Upton, Caitlin Hoffmeister, Tracy Worley, Stephen Begletter, Alex Alvier, Kelly Buma, Carla Thielen, and Lily Gladstone. Find us on Facebook and Twitter. Check the website to find out how you can tell your own story and to learn about themes for 2016. TellUsSomething.org. Thanks for listening.